What's good? What's good? We are back. Yours truly, the one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast, aka Triple P, aka the Common Sense Podcast, your source for music, sports, politics, what events, and much, much more. Today I'm about to bring in a guest. Some of y'all know him as Havoc from the South Central Cartel, aka the Murder Squad. Let's bring him in right now.
What's going on, champ?
What's good? What's good? I see you got the background going. You got the green screen going, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm trying to throw on go live on there so I get you in there.
That's what's up. That's what's up. I had it, man. I'm doing good. I had to do a little bit of homework for this interview.
Oh, you did some homework. Okay.
Is that what? Yeah, I had to do some homework. You know, there was an album I didn't know about that y'all had and whatnot. But I want to start with you first, before like the South Central Cartel days. Let's start like a year before y'all formed the group. Were you a solo artist?
No, never was a solo artist.
Never.
Until down the road.
Okay.
I first got in the music game is basically from my background growing up on the south side of Chicago. My pop, one of the original members of the Hall of Fame, you know, rock and roll, star on the Hall of Fame, you know, Walk of Fame, you know, the Shylights.
Oh, okay. You know, they were on one of your songs.
Yeah, it's an SEC thing. That's how I got them on there. It's my dad group.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. My dad is Squirrel, rest in peace. Eugene Reckitt, rest in peace. And Creed L. Red Jones, rest in peace. And the only original members alive is my Uncle Marshall Thompson. So he tours with the shot, you know, with the replacement Shaw Lights and keeping the legacy going. But just a year and a half ago, we just got the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
So you're originally from Chicago?
Correct. I'm the only member that was in the group South Central Cartel that actually wasn't born in L.A.
Good, because I'm going to have like a question for you about like the gang culture, you know, the comparison, whatnot. Okay, I was looking at your group members. Did you have two cats with the name Havoc?
Yes. The group members, the original South Central. Okay, let's go all the way back to the beginning. Okay, let's go. Let's go all the way back, man. Let's go through history, man.
Okay, so you had an album on Pump Records, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, let's go further before that.
Okay, before that. Okay.
I'm gonna take you all the way back to the beginning. All right. I actually met Prodigy and the mid-80s, around 87.
Was he already Prodigy? Was that his name?
No, I'm going to get to all of that.
Okay, yeah.
So I was dating Prodigy's sister, and at the time,
okay,
his name was Def, MC Def, D-E-F,
okay,
right? And his cousin was named MC Hell. And then they had the DJ by the name of DJ Chaos. They had a little.
I seen that. Yeah, DJ Chaos. Okay.
Separately. So, okay. They was doing their thing. And so when I started dating Prodigy's sister, one day Prodigy came in with Def, you know, Austin Head, we call him at the time, came in with a briefcase. And so I was just curious, like George, right? And I was like, what's in the briefcase, right? He was like, oh, these are my rhymes, right? So it shocked me, you know, he had confidence, you know, like these are my rhymes, right?
In your briefcase at that.
Right. So I was like, man, there ain't no rhymes, right? So he pulled out a couple of them, right? He had a whole stack of rhymes in the, you know, little briefcase. And he busted a few, and he was like, reminding me of Rakim, you know, like the lyrical aspect of him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you dope. And so immediately, man, I just, you know, threw myself in the mix, man. Like, I don't know, God just said, hey, here's an opportunity, jump on it. And I was like, yeah, man, you need to go and let me get in this, you know, let's start a group together. You know what I'm saying? I got to hook up, you know, I got to brag about my daddy. He never knew about all that. Growing up playing with the Jackson 5 and knowing Joe Jackson, Pop Staple and the Staple Singers, the Emotions, and, you know, different Chicago groups that I had access to, you know what I mean, going to my dad's shows and stuff. So I was, you know, being around him, you know, Don Cornelius at Soul Train and things like that. So I was deeply embedded in Chicago culture and knowing, you know, a little bit about music, hearing my dad's music. So I had a professional ear because, you know, my dad and them, I go, you know, hear them make their music. And I was like, oh, they good. Even though that's my dad and them, they had great music. So it was,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And, you know, the quality of their music. And so Prodigy, I guess, thought I was just, you know, talking, but eventually he, you know, eased me in. And our first little group, it was four of us, and we was called Mafia Style.
Okay.
Mafia Style consists of me, and I was going by the name MC Note, right? Because I had a street name by the name of C Note, which meant 100.
Okay. C Note, okay.
Right. So I added the M to the, you know, yeah. C Note.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, MC Note. Yeah, I like right. that. MC
and
Note.
So
yeah.
Prodigy was still deaf. Rhyme Son, who later became the other Havoc.
The Havoc, the Rhyme Son. Yeah.
Right, became the other Havoc, and then...
And there was a DJ, Chaos. Grip.
Right, Grip, okay, he ain't in the group yet.
Okay,
down
yeah.
the road. And okay. LB ain't in the group yet, that's coming, you know.
Yeah.
Move through time, right?
Yeah.
So we had a small issue with the first name, which was Mafia Style, and there was a gang, rest in peace, good friend of mine, Del Dog, and them, so... We didn't really want to get singled out being associated with just one gang because we wanted to represent the culture. So
okay.
If you represent the culture, you need to have something more universal to where you represent the Bloods, the Crips, you know, the Players, the Pimps, the Hookers, or, you know, just in different aspects of the street. We might not agree on everything I'm saying, but I'm just saying it's the street. And no matter how, you know, the outside viewed it, we was trying to be street reporters giving it to you raw.
Okay.
So as we go through time, we go through a different couple of things, right? Where Prodigy wind up going to a label called Kahaf out of New York, who had Easy Mo B producing for him, you know what I mean?
Love Easy Mo B.
Yeah, uh-huh. So I got to meet all of them in the Kahaf days. So he kind of, you know, veered out there. And then we came across another project we did called Chaos and Mayhem. Well, me and Prodigy and Chaos did an album sort of together, and we had our first radio song on K-Day that Greg Mack broke called Smooth Criminal, the original Smooth Criminal.
Okay.
So we went through them little stages, and as we got closer to the 90s, we switched our names finally to the end, and Lover G came up with the name South Central Cartel. So the South Central Cartel got formed as me and Prodigy was holding the fort, right? And then he was, you know, started implementing, you know, other people. That's mm-hmm. when LV, you know, grew up with Prodigy and was singing. And then Grip was one of their homies from the neighborhood. So we pulled him in. So the original SCC was, at the time, Prodigy, me, Rhyme Son, LV, Lover G, right?
Okay.
DJ Chaos, six of us. That was on the first album, South Central Madness.
That was on Pump Records. Yeah. Now, what was Pump Records about? That was an independent label?
It was Russ Regan, the iconic Russ Regan, who sold a billion records, only two men in the history of sold a billion records. He put out Light a Shade of Brown. My boys, rest in peace. My boy from Light a Shade of Brown had the hit over there. So they was booming over there with you know, on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So, also, they had the Chill Deal Boys with the hit record 95 South.
Okay.
There it is.
Yeah. That was big when I was a kid.
Right. Then they switched and became 95 South. But the
original. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. See, I'm trying to give you some history. Yeah. You get it?
Yeah.
The original song was from the Chill Deal Boys. They were signed to Quality.
I seen that Quality Records. That was the distributor for Pump Records, right?
Subsidiary.
Okay.
Of Quality, which was owned by a metal company out of Canada called Artec. Correct.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yes. All right, I'm getting some real history on this. So as we move forward, we got our first deal with South Central Cartel, but me and Prodigy had already kind of was doing the Havoc and Prodigy album, Living in the Crime Way.
Okay.
And as we got closer, we kind of felt like we was about to get a deal. You feel me? So that's when Prod brought the rest of them in, and then we started working on South Central Madness and incorporated some of the Havoc and Prodigy songs into the South Central Madness album.
Okay.
But the Havoc and Prodigy Living in the Crime Way album was actually finished before South Central Madness.
Okay.
It just happened to put that one out first. And then we dropped the Havoc and Prodigy Living in the Crime Wave, which all came out on Quality Pump. So yeah, that was that part of the SCC legacy.
And then y'all got signed to Def Jam after that, if I'm not mistaken?
Correct. Yes, the next deal was Def Jam. At the time, R-Tech went into bankruptcy. And so they...
happened a lot back in the days. Yeah.
So our records got caught up, right? We pretty much went gold, independent, right?
Yeah, I saw that. Y'all charted 51.
Yes. And so Russ Regan being a great role model to me and knowing who my father was and everything, working with my dad in the way back in the 60s when Russ was working with Stack Records and different parts of the game. And also Aubrey Taylor was working for Pump Quality, doing all of the promotion, radio, for my dad now. So they kind of kept me, you know what I mean, a little in the loop without, you know what I mean? So Russ Regan allowed me to go shop SCC with the condition that Havoc and Prodigy albums stay with them. Because we had Crime Wave and we had two remaining albums on the deal. So we go get a deal and blow up. That'll help Quality, right, maintain some power with Havoc and Prodigy, which at the time, Adam Levy from Warlock Records was interested in buying because they was in bankruptcy.
It, just for people who don't know, when you say stay with them, you mean just they own the rights to the album?
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Correct. Of the Havoc and Prodigy remaining rights that we had two different deals with Quality Pop. We had Havoc and Prodigy three albums and South Central SCC's three album deal. So we had two production deals. That was my first production deal for GWK with 50,000 with Pump Quality. Right. And then we turned around and we got 35,000 for the Havoc and Prodigy. My first two production deals through GWK.
Now, Def Jam, it was the Gats and Gats We Trust.
Right,
that was the first
album. So during the transition, there was a big event goes on every year in Atlanta. It was called Jack the Rapper.
Jack the Rapper.
Yeah. So, you know, we had already been to Jack the Rapper a previous year when we were signed to Quality to go, you know, help promote the album, meet different rappers, different networkings from around the world, all convened in Atlanta for the Jack the Rapper. So this time I was going for the second time, but I was going out there to shop the Murder Squad, the original Murder Squad cassette. Right?
Okay. That was my favorite album y'all did, actually.
But that wasn't even the album. That's a whole nother album.
Okay.
That's within the Click Murder Squad.
Yeah.
He didn't reach out to everybody.
Now, what was the difference between that and SCC? Was it just extra members?
Yes, there was all members in the Click that was with us.
Okay.
The original Murder Squad.
Okay.
They were kind of more self-contained.
Okay.
But as we signed the Def Jam, I had started meeting a lot of the celebrities in the rap game. You know, because I did a lot of hustling and promoting myself. So as I started meeting everybody, I started creating more of just being the mouthpiece. I started learning the business and marketing, retail, radio, you know, going to the beat, hanging out with Dominique the Prima and, you know, the beat with Theo and, you know what I'm saying? Also Dinah Steele was working there. My girl Lisa Canny, who used to be on the original K-Day, you know. So I go way back with her when she was on the original K-Day with Greg Mack and Kaufman and, you know, the original K-Day that was on AM. So, yeah, I go way back into them type of roots on the West Coast. So, but yeah, then actually at the Jack the Rapper, that's when I bumped into Russell Simmons.
Okay.
And then I approached Russell, and Russell gave me his number. And then he said, call me. So I called him for about 8-9 months, constantly.
Okay.
He was like, call me back. And this magic word was call me back. He was busy, called me back, but he answered. That meant a lot to me. He just didn't let it go to voicemail, and you feel me? And so finally he said he was going to be in L.A. and he wanted me to meet with him, and he was going to be at the Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. So I went up, met him at the Four Seasons. So I told Prodigy, you know, I was going to meet with him. So we shot, you know, to the studio, you know, kitchen sink where we was doing our music, and we recorded some hot shit. You know, not just go do some stuff, you know, some pre-production shit. We went and, you know, really put the work in, you know what I mean? Because I'm, you know, I'm financing everything. So I know that the quality of the music needed to be at a level that it's accustomed to being, like the South Central Madness album. You feel me? So we went to, you know, and recorded about 8 songs. And so to make history, Russell loved the songs and offered a deal, which is GWK's second deal. And that's when we received $325,000 for our first deal on Def Jam.
And let me ask you something. Did y'all, was Def Jam had any like gangster rap acts at that time?
Oh, no, nothing. Oh, they had one act that was signing simultaneously with us. And that was
false. But I was thinking that. There wasn't really no really like.
No West Coast acts at all, period. Zero. Look. Zero ilch. Look, ilch.
Yeah.
Ilch. We was the first group to sign with them, and I took Kevin Lau on his first promo tour out of college, out of Baltimore, the great Kevin Lau. Yeah. So he went on tour with us to do the In Gas We Trust tour. I had already been on tour with Aubrey Taylor with the South Central Madness album. So okay. I had already had the West Coast sold up through Sam Goody's, the Warehouse, the Moms and Pops, Calvin out there at Long Beach, and you know, all of the One Stops. Man, I had all that hooked up, Chicago, all the One Stops, because that's my hometown, all up north, Portland, up there with my boy, you know, Sir Missing a Lot DJ, had the radio show. I met Dominique up there at the mall, at the mall where everybody hung out there in Oakland. You know, where she had the video show. She was in the video, Brenda's Got a Baby. Then she eventually moved to the beat and had the Ruthless radio show with Easy. You know what I mean? And I was on that radio show that day when Easy got into it with a Dog Pound and them. You hear me? I'm on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Easy and Dominique, when they on the radio, and I'm trying to make peace. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Doing the interview. That was the day Easy gave me a lot of game about let me acknowledge all the work that I was doing and what it was, because I was just doing it. And he was like, nigga, you like me. You're a record company. You need
that. Yeah.
You get it? And he said, look, and never take your videos out the hood. Yeah, I'm telling you the words out of Eric Eazy-E Wright's mouth. We're in the parking lot at the beat when it was in Hollywood, when they had the Black Gate. We said, pull up there. It looked like an apartment, been an old funeral home or something.
Yeah.
The gate. That's when I had the Candy Apple BMW. So I pull up in my Beamer, and Easy was sitting out there, and we were smoking some weed and shit. You know what I mean?
And rest in peace to Easy.
Rest in peace, Easy. Yeah. So yeah, Easy gave me a lot of game, man. So, but anyway, wound up getting a deal with Def Jam. And you know, that's when I brought in Tupac. I met Tupac, you know, through Tretch and them at Jack the Rapper. Well, actually, I met Pac up in Oakland at an E-40 situation up there when I was met Spice and Triad Records when Spice had his first EP on a label called Triad.
Okay.
And I was up there doing some promotion with her. And so that's when I met Pac. And, you know, I was at the premiere of Juice. You know, Pac invited me to the premiere of Juice in Hollywood on Century. They had it at the little hotel on Century. So I was there with Pac and them when they were showing a little premiere. But yeah, man, you know, hanging out with Tretch, you know, all of them, got them to come be on the Murder Squad. I did the gangster team. I brought in Eight, Spice One, Tupac, and MCA, Spice One, Tupac, and Ice-T. And SCC was on that, you know, classic, you know, once in a lifetime song, the gangster team.
Yeah, yeah, I was checking that out earlier today and whatnot.
Yeah, so we got, you know, we got music in 8 Mile, you know what I'm saying? We got music.
Y'all on 8 Mile? I didn't remember y'all being on 8 Mile.
When they beating up, when they jumping out the truck in the alley, when they beat up Eminem.
I got to go back and check that out. I didn't know y'all had something on 8 Mile.
Yeah, it's playing in the actual movie. So it's like part of the score. So when they in the alley, the guy pulling up in the black truck, and they bump into gang stories. And that's when they jump out.
I got to ask you this question. You know, being from the East Coast, we listen to a lot of West Coast hip hop, you know. But we used to call y'all
West Coast. We listen to a lot of East Coast.
Yeah, but we used to call y'all the West Coast Havoc and Prodigy. Absolutely. Did y'all like?
We got into a little situation with that.
Did y'all used to like not like that, or you know, when East Coast cats?
It bothered us. Yeah,
it bothered Mobb Deep.
It bothered Mobb Deep.
Okay.
When we became Havoc and Prodigy in the late 80s, them niggas was like 12. You get it?
Yeah.
With already Havoc and Prodigy.
And in the West Coast, they probably just called y'all Havoc and Prodigy. They wouldn't call y'all the West Coast Havoc and Prodigy.
Yeah. The thing about it is, their music and our music never really interacted because we came out with our first Havoc and Prodigy album in 92.
Okay.
But we was already Havoc and Prodigy and had the album.
Okay.
So we was Havoc and Prodigy within the group SCC.
Yeah.
Two Havocs. But the solo Havoc was just me and Prod. You get it?
So y'all definitely had beef just over the names.
Like they sent our attorney a letter saying we stole their name.
And like, when did the Juvenile Hell album drop?
I think in 90 something. You know,
because that was their first album, and I wasn't really big on it.
Yeah, we had got into it, and my boy Guru broke, you know, stopped.
Rest in peace to Guru.
Yeah, rest in peace. Guru's a great guy.
Yeah. Love Guru.
All of them. Because, you know, I used to go out to New York a lot, man.
So Guru tried to kind of squash the beef with that?
At another Jack the Rapper, they tried to rush me and got an incident with the other Havoc and Pride at another incident in another part of it.
Yeah.
The one with me personally, Guru intervened because I had a Havoc chain on.
Yeah.
Right? And they ran up to me telling me I stole their name. Right? So I see two me little niggas, so I dropped my luggage. Nigga, this nigga, I'm ready to, you know, like put these niggas over my knee.
Yeah, they shorter, like short as me or shorter than me. Like yeah, Havoc, they got
back
like,
then, nigga, 92, my, I mean 93. Yeah. Imagine. But anyway, the little incident with me, I you know, I'm about to mop these little niggas, nigga. I'm by myself, but we like 100 deep, West Coast, out in the park, you know, in the they ain't getting ready to come in, but I'm going to get our room. So I'm basically got my luggage going to the front desk.
Yeah.
And they rush me. You know what I'm saying? That's when they say, oh, we shook FCC. Nigga, you ain't never shook FCC. Nigga, you about to get shook. But it wasn't that serious.
I remember when I first saw your album, man, I was like, these dudes are something out of like Boys in the Hood, man. Like, it was just like, just looking at the cover, I was like, I wasn't questioning anything about your music.
A photographer retired after that and been getting, he's been getting counseling.
Okay.
What are you getting? Here with the guns.
Yeah. He's been getting counseling.
It's an article on YouTube about
He's been getting counseling because y'all took a picture with like posing with guns?
Yeah, he was scared because LV was playing with him with the gun.
Oh, man.
Yeah, deep look, they got a whole little segment about it, about him and all his great work and album covers. Freeman, something like that. But if you look on there, who's the photographer on the Gas with Trust album? They got a segment about that, and he goes nut about us that he would never do a photograph with SCC.
So how old were y'all on that album cover?
Huh?
How old were y'all on that album cover?
That was 93. So I was in my early 30s.
Okay.
A little older than the other members.
Okay.
But Prodigy and them was younger. You know what I'm saying? Prodigy, Rhyme, Son. LV was more my age. LV older than everybody.
Like being like from South Central, I'm guessing like it was hard to escape gang culture.
Yeah, but to go back, but also I was the one that took Tupac to the video Spice Head when he jumped on the Hughes brothers when one of them.
Oh,
yeah, he was with me in the studio recording the Gangsta Tank.
What was that about again? For historical purposes?
It was about the movie.
Okay.
They fired him from the movie.
Okay. And what movie was it again they fired him from?
Just Society.
Oh, that's right. Pac was supposed to play?
He was in Poetic Justice.
Well, Pac, what part was Pac supposed to play again? He was
supposed to play Dog.
Dog. Dog. Yeah.
I gotta give you a whole, you know.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember. I remember that he was supposed to play a part. I just couldn't remember what part it was.
Yeah, because I was with Pac, and then we was in New York at the first annual Source Awards.
Yeah.
Pac had took over the stage when they gave the album of the year to my boy P-Rock at CL Smooth and them. Down with the King.
Yeah, Down with the King.
Waiting on them to come up. Pac and them turned the music on, jacked the stage, and you know what I mean, was pissed off. You know what I mean? That's what Suge was talking about. Yeah, man, and you know, you don't want your CEO dancing all in your video, come to that row. And Pac was trying to get me to go on stage with them. But because if you notice, when MC8 got his award, I was on the mic before 8 even came up to the mic to get his award for Straight Up Menace. Menace to Society movie.
Yeah, I love that
one. I was up at the mic screaming, Russell, man, I got so many things. Me and Pac, when we was in Atlanta, we was doing an interview with Sherry Carter on BET. Russell calling me on the phone while me and Pac promoting, you know, in Gas We Trust, the gangster team. He was giving it up for me. Russell called me. I'm like, Russell, don't you see me, man, promote? Man, I'll hit you back later. Look, I'm on live with Sherry Carter, and we having a ball, me and Pop, in Atlanta.
You think the media made that beef worse, or was it a real beef?
Far as who?
The Pac and Big. Death Row, the Bad Boy.
You know, Pac was quiet, so he never really revealed his hand.
Yeah.
How he was with me. You feel me? You know what I mean? He was always, you know, he always fucked with me. Called me, I hung out with Potter, a few times.
Yeah. It never seemed like Big really had beef with him either.
Huh?
And it never really seemed like Big really had any beef with Pac either.
Right. And, I met Andre Harrell and Puffy and them back when, Puffy was working for Uptown before he left and got the deal with, got a solo deal.
Yeah.
I had met Puffy in, matter of fact, in Atlanta at Jack the Rapper. We was at the Swiss Hotel. Yeah. Me, Pac, and my boy Q-Ball. And we was all in the, waiting on the valet. And that's when Puffy pulled up. He had just signed his deal. Yeah, sure did. Talk to me and my boy Q-Ball.
Did they always do the Jack the Rapper in Atlanta back then?
I don't know, but he was at that one.
Okay.
He was definitely at that one. That was the one when, that's when Too Short was staying in Atlanta.
Too Short moved to Atlanta.
Yeah, it was right there by the little swap meet on the corner. Him and Ann Banks and all of them had moved out there. This was during that time.
I mean, this is before Atlanta hip hop was even big, right?
Right, yeah, they was moving, they was starting to grow then.
Yeah.
That's when the Chill Deal Boys blew up with the Whoop, There It Is, and, that type of stuff was starting to, develop. Usher, because I had did a school tour with Usher. So Usher was breaking AT out, when his mama was managing him. So
You did a school tour with Usher?
Yeah, man.
Which school tour?
In Chicago. We did South Shore. Weston House, we did a few of them. Yeah,
okay.
I met his mom, and we did a show out. I did a show with Usher, me and Prodigy, rather. Did a show with Usher and Soul for Real, and it was out with Prodigy at a club off of Halsted. Yeah, man. I met so many people, man. You wouldn't even believe it, man. I have come across, and my almost 40 years in this business.
I want to talk about the Murder Squad compilation. That's my favorite, project that y'all did.
Thank you.
That was South Central Cartel, but it was different, right? I mean,
I did that whole album. I put together that whole
album. You put the whole album? Okay.
Russell changed the name and put South Central Cartel Presents the Murder Squad. Russell did that. But the album was supposed to have been Havoc Presents the Murder Squad.
Oh, okay.
You get it? GW. Yeah. Whatever it was my project. I paid for the project myself, and Russell gave me a deal and basically, leased my masters.
Why do you?
Yeah, I did a lot of work with that. That's when I brought in J.O., my boy BG Knockout and them doing the beef when they was having with the dog.
Okay, I'm on BG Knockout, yeah.
Yeah, when they.
And Drayster, I think it is. BG Knockout, Drayster.
They had a diss, the dog pound them.
Yeah.
Oh, but they used our song and it kind of created a little riff with us when they said, what would you do if I stepped up to your front door with a 4-4 BG, right? You know, hit them back on the knock on wood.
So, okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, and I broke up a little fight with them at a John Stockton birthday party. We was at
John Stockton?
Yeah, oh, yes, my boy John Stock. Anyway, yeah, man, Drayster, man, was finna get into it with Snoop. You know what I mean? So I'm in the middle of them and Drayster and BG and them little niggas ready to go out and get, you know, pistols and all that. So I had to calm all them down because, you know, they got mad respect for me because me and BG like this.
Well, they was down with Easy too, though, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Used to hang out on Main Street at a little spot. He used to hang out. Then he went to jail for like 10 years. You know what I mean? That's when he had went to jail and got out, you know. But, yeah, I used to hang out with BG in South Central on Main on 80-something and 50. Yeah, I think it was like 70-something, 50. Yeah, off of Main. Yeah.
I want to talk about your sound a little bit.
Okay.
Like, well, it sounds Prodigy, like
Prodigy is the sound. Prodigy was pretty much the musical genius behind all of the sound of the SCC first album, him and Chris Jammarama Johnson. You know, that's when Prod wasn't even producing. He was just rapping. He merged into a producer as we got to the Havoc and Prodigy album and then the And Gas We Trust album, Prod took over.
It seemed like there was a lot of funk and kind of like Roger Troutman kind
of. Oh, yeah. We had a lot of Roger, man.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Roger, man. Rest in peace, Roger, man. I had just met him 2 weeks before he got killed. He was doing a song with Spice One. We was in New York. New York. I was with Spice recording the song Spice Head with Roger. And 2 weeks later, that's when his brother killed him. He gave him his number, man, because I was wanting to do a track with him.
Why does he have such a big influence over the West Coast, early West Coast sound, it seems like?
Because of the funk. His music.
Yeah, the funk.
And so once a trend starts, it develops. And Roger had multiple musical sounds that was easy to adapt.
Even Dr. Dre used a lot of... You know, yeah, that Roger Troutman.
Everybody used a lot of Zap.
Yeah.
Roger songs, you know what I mean? And a lot had to do with the drum beats, too, you know?
Yeah.
Back then, we used a lot of Luke drum beats that, you know, kind of gave it similar feels, too.
Yeah.
So we was into a lot of that when we was in our early development with Chris Jammarama, Prodigy. And I had my little, you know, little pieces that I started to grow in, learn how to be a producer. You know, so yeah. You know,
yeah, I definitely caught that. Like Roger Troutman, funk. I was just listening to the beats. I was like, there's a lot of funk in here, a lot of Roger Troutman.
You Get Clown had it. South Central Madness had it. We had Gangsta Love, you know what I mean? So yeah, we was Roger. That first album was deep with Roger. We had like four tracks with Roger.
What's your opinion of the modern day West Coast sound?
It has this great sound that has developed. You know, I would give it up to Mustard and you know all of them, the YGs.
Yeah.
I give it up for like that. They took the LV sounds, right, which developed to a Pensa Domino, right.
Domino, I remember Domino.
I'm gonna take it back to you.
Yeah.
So they took a little bit of the Gangster, a little bit of the Domino, a little bit of the Snoops, and you know, the Michelets, and you know, all of the earlier, you know, sounds that were in the mid-80s, late-80s, and started to change and merge during the early 90s. When the singing started to intertwine with hip hop. Because remember, early hip hop wasn't no singing, bro. Come on, that was
It was frowned on. It was frowned on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, but see, we didn't care about that.
Because yeah.
From a shot like background.
Yeah.
You get it. So you can crown me on when we was doing early songs when my dad and them did a song with us called "Love Is a Mac" back in the '80s. You get it. So before Snoop and them, you know, brought in the. The dramatics, you know what I mean? We had already done that.
Yeah. So you would say that the West Coast cats nowadays, they're not really selling out the West Coast sound like New York did, right? New York totally sold out the sound.
I don't agree with a sellout.
Well, they totally strayed away from the sound. And let's say that. They totally strayed away from any part of the sound.
Let's go back to the beginning. As West Coast was planting seeds to grow a West Coast sound, the flower of hip hop was already growing on the East Coast.
But y'all also adopted the East Coast sound with cats like Dilated Peoples and the Alcoholics and the King T's of the world. So you're the best of both worlds.
Right, because in their mindset, that what they loved and appreciated. I say their creative juices was more catered to what some of the East Coast was doing. But there's also artists who want to create their lifestyle. And so West Coast lifestyle was totally opposite of an East Coast lifestyle.
Yeah.
You're right, it is.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to differentiate.
It's apples and oranges. Apples and oranges.
Of music and hip hop. You got the musical part. You got the lyrical part, you got the culture part, you got the, you know, the riots and the different stuff that might be going on the West Coast, considering to what's going on the East Coast with the, you know, projects and how you got the different barrels or whatever the different things they call in, you know, the East Coast. You get it? And then you got a little bit of twist of Philly jumping in there, New Jersey jumping in there, Manhattan.
Boston.
Right, but they wasn't really grown yet. But I'm just saying the early part of hip hop way was really, you know what I mean? With the when it came out with the song Hibbity, and it don't stop.
Oh yeah.
You get it? And so that was my first hip hop experience next to Yizzy, the double did Dutch. The double Dutch. But see, them was my early experience, and when I heard them, immediately being a little kid, right, I jumped to that because it was different from what my daddy and them was singing, you know, the slow, you know, love songs and, you know what I mean? And then listening to the Emotions and the Jackson 5 early on. So that was that sound. But as a kid, you know, you want to, you know, you be in the car and you only got to listen to what your daddy and mama play.
Yeah. So, pretty much,
listen to music.
For me, it was Elvis. My mom was always playing Elvis.
Right, but you're right. But when your mama was gone, right, and you had a chance to control that knob, and you looked.
Oh, it was Michael Jackson and Prince.
Yeah, it was Michael Jackson and Prince. So now I'm finding stations of music that's, you know, if I liked it because I liked the rock and roll, I liked it, all type of music. You know, I used to listen to. You know, Pink Floyd, and I used to listen.
I listened to rock and roll back in the day.
Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon. You Ain't Said Nothing to the Tin Man. Pink Floyd. You know, Blondie. You know what I mean? You know, all that type of music. You know, Uptown. You know, Boy Living in the Downtown World. You know, all. You know, because of MTV and you know, it started to break loose. You know, Madonna. You know, you're getting a little Cyndi Lauper, Pat Benatar. You know what I mean? Then I started listening to their rhythmics and, you know what I mean? So my musical, but just to get back to the difference of West Coast, is these is the differences. It's the people who lived in the culture of the cities who were deciding what musical way they wanted to go with it. So, but if you embed it in the West Coast, because even when you listen to, Far Side, you know what I mean?
Yeah, love Far Side, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So when you listen to a Far Side, they got an East Coast
Influence, yeah.
But it's a West Coast musical sound, in the wordplay.
Yeah.
See, their wordplay about, they might say something about palm trees or Venice Beach, or you get it? And East Coast, it's going to be Staten Island, the trains, you know, the subways, the different, you know what I mean? Right, that's what I mean about how it's intervals of it.
The lingo, you know what I'm saying?
And so, the West Coast tried to, you know, because with Compton having an early influence, right? Compton had an early influence on West Coast hip hop. So it started painting.
As you would say that's because NWA, I'm guessing?
I don't want to diss NWA. That ain't, but see, me being somebody that does business and understand hard work and finances and being in the trenches way above just being in the studio, making a beat, having the money to pay for that beat, having the money to bring all of the tools together to create all of that, I would give an edge over the Eazy-E.
Okay. I mean, Eazy was the money. He was
let me give Eazy some flowers.
He was the money, right, man. You know, the man with the money is really like
so if you was
the driving force. The gangsta,
if you was to take away the gangsterism of what Eazy, of just say, take away the stigma of Eazy's gangsterism, right? What people were so scared of, gangster rap, right? Reality rap.
Yeah.
You put him in the light of Berry Gordy.
Yeah.
Right. Legacies in the music business should be built on sales and what you bring to the historic placement in an era, in a setting. You get it?
Yeah.
And what Eazy brought, hold it, my brother. Come on, I'm going to break it down historic, era-wise. And what a Berry Gordy would get recognized for, what a Russell Simmons would get recognized for, what a Barry Wise would get recognized for, a Monica Lynch or Cheryl Dickinson, or, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, all these labels that were led like a Rush Regan and a Clyde Davis. You know, I can go on and on because I'm historically knowledgeable of music because I do my homework and I want to be in that setting. So in order to be in the setting, I must know of the legacies and the people that sits amongst the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of building labels, sounds, and legacies. So now let's go to all the people I just named. Now, when you put all of them historically, what they got for what they built, look what Jive built with E-40 and all of them, Spice Ones and all that, Monica Lynch with Farside, and De La Soul, rest in peace, the one that just got
killed. Just passed away,
you know, Coolio, and you know
Coolio, Coolio was big when I was a kid too.
You told a story. So now
MC Hammer out of Oakland, I mean, people want to diss Hammer, but you wouldn't diss him to his face, man.
He broke over major doors. He got a $27 million deal with Capitol. He blew it, but he got $27 million. Hammer had the greatest hip-hop show in the history of rap.
And he employed a shit ton of people.
Wait, let me make this one more time. MC Hammer and the Hammer crew, right?
Yeah.
Too Big and the girls, all of them, the hype man, you know what I'm saying? MC Hammer had the greatest show on stage in the history of hip hop. If anybody disagree with that, I'm willing, man, to go get a Hammer show and their show and show you the difference.
World's greatest hip hop entertainer?
Man, hip hop ain't entertaining. They ain't got no dancers, and he coming on with the little special passes and going across the
stage.
Right, but that was then. Remember? You can't judge that based on your overall history because it's different history.
Never judged Hammer like people judged Hammer. Like they would always, it's kind of like how people judge Post Malone. They'd be like, oh, he don't be spitting bars. Post Malone never really said he wanted to spit bars. Like,
thank you.
Can't put things on people that they don't want to put on themselves.
Now
you know
you
what I'm
understand
saying?
What I mean.
No, I totally get it.
Right. So, but my point is, nobody ever going to have a better show than him.
I'm not going to take nothing from Easy, because Easy, if I'm not mistaken, the first single Easy recorded, nobody, like, they had nobody else to rap it, and he literally recorded it, and it was a hit.
Bar by bar.
Like, who records their first song? Very first song is a hit.
Somebody else. The song, Easy Does It.
Yeah.
Song was for somebody else.
You know, it's crazy. Like, I mean, nobody records their first song ever is a hit. Like, you know, first song is usually like probably the worst song you ever done in your entire life, usually. Right. I would think. I want to ask you about some gang culture. Right, you, since you were in Chicago, mm-hmm. LA, what makes Chicago gang culture and LA gang culture so different? What I heard is there's just no leadership. There's no kind of leadership.
It's a lot of difference. Okay, when the first time I left Chicago, it was during when the time the Black Gangster Disciple Nation.
Okay.
Black Gangster Disciple.
What's their leadership? Their leadership then
was starting, and they had great leadership.
Okay.
Now, when I say great leadership, I don't mean to apply that being in a gang.
I get what you mean. I understand what you mean.
I want to put you in the mindset of it.
There was some order put in place.
There was some order. There were meetings.
Yeah.
There were rules. There were laws.
Yeah.
You know, you had to know what each point of the star represented. Yeah. Life, loyalty, wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. You had to know, you know, the king's name. You know what I'm saying? You had to know King David, King Shorty, Don Durkee, and deceased and King Hoover, you know, and knowing, you know, the stuff, and then eventually the L. Rookins form, you know, they was eventually were a spinoff of the Blackstone Rangers, right? And that's when Jeff Ford created that. Then the Vice Lords came in. I watched all of this develop. Look, I seen it all develop as I grew up, because I was kind of dibbling in the, you know, with the folks, you know what I'm saying? I was, you know, a 10 trade, you know, gangster at that time, but now it's the Wild Wild Hundreds. You know what I'm saying? But they had a lot of order. They had the mindset of like Capone.
Okay, and Capone, I would say, is always it's had a big influence over the city, right?
Thank you. Absolutely. How they set up, how they hit every neighborhood, how they hit up the floors. You had to pay for protection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You couldn't operate in these neighborhoods without having them protect you. You know, they really deep with it, you know, with the drug game, how they distribute it, how, you know what I'm saying? LA eventually, the difference for me when I got in LA was more built on colors.
Okay.
Colors.
It wasn't so much hoods, but colors.
Yeah, colors. It created
okay, the like the movie, Colors.
Right. Colors created colors.
Yeah.
The colors created the hood.
Okay.
In Chicago, it was the hacks.
Chicago, I would say, a lot had to do with Prohibition days, too, though, right?
Right, Chicago had a political thing.
Yeah, the Prohibition days and fighting over the liquor, and it just bled over afterwards.
And on 68th, 69th, and Stony Island, where they had the building held down.
Yeah.
The world was watching, you know, with the Panthers, you know what I mean? And so Chicago had a little political with it. You know?
Okay.
So, and L.A. too now, you know, as it grew, you know, with the riots and Natasha Harlem's killing, and you know, so I can find different reasons in different areas. But anyway, the gang culture in California was more about colors. It was more about low riding, because the Latins had a big contribution in gang culture on the West Coast.
Yeah, of course.
Chicago.
Yeah, you're right. So you're now, right. Yeah, yeah.
We're dealing with two major races. And they're kind of fracturing. It's like a friction.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't there some kind of pitting against them too?
Right. I'm going to keep it 100 for you. We're gonna understand how it developed. You got the Latins who, right, and there's a prejudiceness there. Then you got the Blacks who always been, you know, the bottom of the barrel, everything. You get it? And so this was our time to really get out there and stand for something powerful. And so the Bloods and Crips were that method. But then you had the Southsiders, the Paisas, and the developing, but they more was lowriders. You know, they had their little sound with the music, the tattoos. They the ones who brought the tattoos to a greater awareness amongst.
What about the Mexican Mafia? When did they kind of come in?
But see, the Mexican Mafia is more formed, come from Mexico.
Okay.
And then integrated. Because that's where the drugs coming from. So they needed people on the other side where they growing all the drugs from to be the recipient and then help the distribution. So
how much did prison have to do with anything in like LA gang culture forming?
It's the same thing as the streets, but it changed over the years.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, the blacks ran the jails. Then the gang started to get in there. So they started separating the Bloods and putting them in special modules, blood modules, because the Crips were dominating at the time.
Okay.
The Crips was dominating the whole county jail at that time. So if you wasn't Cripping, you had to either PC up or go be put in special blood modules and all of that. And because of that, as it grew, you know.
Now, let me ask you this, though. Okay, you said it's mainly Crips. Is this a bunch of races?
This is in the late 80s. Okay.
Now, is this multiple races of Crips, like whites, blacks, Hispanics?
No, it's more black. Crips were pretty much black dominated then.
Okay.
You get it?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm talking about, I'm doing my first time in the county jail. And
now, what about the Bloods? They were mainly black dominated too?
I did my first county time in 81.
81. I was 2 years old.
81. I got my first number in discharge.
I was 2 years old.
Right? Me.
Yeah.
Right? That's when I went to RC West. I went to Chino Institute for Men when they had the underwater swimming pool. They did that. They had Cedar. That's when I actually met Del Dog. That's where I met Del Dog, rest in peace, from Main Street. We was in the same dorm doing a riot. You know what I mean?
Who is that? I'm not familiar with that.
Del Dog was the leader of Main Street Mafia.
Okay.
And he got killed some years ago. But he was the heart and soul of Main Street Mafia. Crip was a huge gang in LA. But the county jail, man, it went through a lot of transition. And for me, I was a part of all the transition because I got rid of six numbers, man. I've been in prison, man, six times, and I got rid of six numbers.
Wow.
I started out with a V number. So only people that been in the pen know about a V number. See, everybody
talking about that. I know nothing about that.
Thank you. See, people that don't know nothing about it, they won't even understand what a V number is.
I spent one night in jail. That was enough for me.
How do you think we came up with the song County Blues? Because of all my jail time, I said, man, we need to do a song about the county. And then that's when I started off. I woke up in jail like, damn, I must be dreaming. I can't be dreaming. I don't see no bitches I can diss. All these niggas around me, I know him. I know him and I know that motherfucker. I must be in this county again. In the blues. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's when you was getting the wet 40. They used to dip your money. You know, they used to give you a little free, we used to call it tree bark. We used to call it
tree bark.
Yeah, we used to have a little bags. They used to make the money bags, the Mexicans, the SAs, used to sell them, make them different colors and sell them, put your money in. And, you know, county jail was way different back then, way different.
Now, do you think gang culture was worse then or is worse now?
I would say it's the same.
It's the same.
It's more because of social media, because of
everything. More video and more footage.
More awareness of people paying more attention, right? It's just more magnified. And then there's more people participating now. So the numbers are bigger because America is growing. cities are growing. So as you grow, the numbers grow.
Yeah.
It may seem like it's way more. It's not way more. It's just way more of the world expansion. And it's just magnified through social media, news media, and people dying every day, which is part of life, part of God's plan, part of everything, no matter how you want to sum it up, look at it.
Yeah, people die every day. Yeah.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Go holler at God, man, and see how far you get with it, with it.
So, let's see what I had some more little notes here.
Mm-hmm.
What we had. Oh, yeah, on your album. When I was looking on your album, did y'all have a radio version and an instrumental on one of your albums?
On which song?
I want to say it was on Murder Squad album or something. Didn't y'all have like a knock on wood?
Was on SCC album. It was called, it's an SCC thing.
Yeah.
We had an original version on the In Gas We Trust album.
Yeah.
It was just the FCC.
But I thought y'all had like a knock on wood clean version, I thought, on the album and the instrumental.
Wood too. You two for two. So we got a version of knock on wood with this. The squad click, right? And then we got a version with just us, our click. So it's two versions of Knock on Wood. And then there's two versions of it's an SCC thing. We got an original SCC thing on the In Gas We Trust album, and then we remixed it with my dad's group, the Shalites, on the Murder Squad album.
Well, y'all the only people that ever did that though? I've never seen the album before. Y'all had the instrumental and the clean version.
Yeah, we got clean versions on songs.
No, I'm talking about on the album though. Was that like that was pre-planned? No.
Also, we had a different versions of what's that damn song? Me and Prodigy had a song. We did. We got a video to it. So we had a dirty version and a clean version remix that we never put out. The clean version, but the video is to the clean version. But we have a different version on the Kickin' Game album. That's the way it's going down. So yeah, so we got a lot of different stuff, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because I was like, that was unusual, but I thought it was kind of genius because rappers could rap over the instrumental, and then you had the clean version on there for like radio and most people usually put it on a single.
We first grew banned from radio.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, SCC Gangsta Love was banned on the radio.
For what?
Gangsta Love.
I mean, what they didn't give you like an exact reason?
The word gangster in 1991 was a derogatory word.
That was before Luke went before Supreme Court and all that. Yeah.
Love on the radio. And then we had a few stations that played Gangsta Love.
That's when parents were sitting out there like really
turned around and took our upset. He took our same beat. Look, same beat and redid it and made a huge hit.
And that's another thing. How much backlash were y'all getting for making gangster music that early?
Lack of shows, get on the elevator, they get off the elevator, no radio play, especially with the In Gas We Trust album. That's when it got bad.
Did you ever feel like it was too gangster?
Well, that's what Russell wanted. Russell was like, man, Russell was like, man, keep it like, you know, y'all culture, man. Like, he didn't want us to bubblegum it.
Yeah. Well, there was some rappers that always felt like were too hard for radio. I thought Smooth the Hustler was one of those cats. Like, he was just...
Yeah, because, see, we could have bubblegummed it down.
Yeah.
Get it? But why do that, but then it take away from how it really was in the streets?
Yeah.
So if you bubblegum down somebody, you know, cooking up a ounce, chop it up, sell it, right? Yeah. Now you got somebody who's a drug addict, you know, out here fiending, robbing.
Yeah.
There's so many different elements to go with it.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that what for the bubblegum rappers before, though? So they can bubblegum it?
Well, bubblegum, you come around bubblegum rap, man, you're getting dissed.
See, I mean, there's always bubblegum rappers, so, you know, you can just let them be the bubblegum rappers.
And see, it wasn't no big radio play. See, the streets ran everything.
Yeah.
Remember, word of mouth was the streets back then.
Yeah.
We have no goddamn social medias and all this different stuff to show different things you do.
Man, the street team and radio.
Right, with the swap meets, the moms and pops when you walk in the store, when I go to the Sloss and, you know, the Broadway, the Compton swap meet, you know what I mean? You had to go up in there and meet with all them, you know, Asian, you know, stores and get them, you know what I mean? Get them some free product so they can make some money. Then they put your poster up, you get the black and whites, you know, 8x10s, autograph about, you know, 50 of them, you know, man. You know, that was real hustling, man.
Yeah, I remember those days. Distribution mattered.
Yeah, that's the hustle I'm used to doing.
What's the group members doing nowadays?
Well, Prodigy's still doing an amazing job producing beats.
Okay.
You know, Young Prod is one of the most gifted, underrated West Coast writers. You know, he should be up there like Corrupt, you know what I'm saying? Young Prod, Prodigy's younger brother.
Okay.
You know, married, you know, working, doing his thing. You know, LB, you know, still doing, you know, his little thing, making a little money off of Gangsta's Paradise. He sung on with Coolio, won a Grammy with that.
Oh, he sung on that, Gangsta's Paradise?
Yeah, that's
yeah, I didn't know that.
He got a Grammy with Coolio for that. So, you know, pretty much, you know.
I'm glad you put that together. I never actually caught onto that he was from y'all's group. And that was a huge song.
Yes.
Huge song back then.
It's a whole story.
That's Coolio's probably biggest song, right? Yeah.
So Paul Stewart wound up getting a job to run Def Jam West, but Leo Korns offered me that job first. I turned it down. That's how Paul Stewart got to run Def Jam West. I was the first person offered that job. Leo pulled me up in the Four Seasons and offered me $80,000 a year to do that job.
And you putting out artists and stuff nowadays, right?
Yeah, I got my own new label. You know, it's called Game Changer Entertainment. I got a new distribution deal with Bungalow Universal.
Okay.
So I'm dropping new music. I got Foax signed, and so I'm you know, building up my catalog, you know, building up all of my you know, media, you know, all of the moderate what they call you know, the new way of digital entertainment has come full circle now.
And so yeah,
the digital entertainment is now. And so I have pretty much mastered the way it is now. So, you know, me and you've been doing a little dibbling dabbling with promotion, you know, with Tiffany.
Yep.
And so that's when I, you know, was just doing it, you know, through CD Babies and stuff, and was kind of learning it. And, you know, you learn by the process.
Like, yeah.
Do it, promoting, seeing what work, what do work, how, what numbers is effective, you know, how you get yourself in, you know, and all these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of new digital ways to promote today's music.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to innovate, game changer. And so, you know, that's where I'm at now. Pretty much got it mastered. And so now I'm getting all the music uploaded, creating my own playlists, you know, learn how to master all of the portals. Cause you know, you're talking about all these portals. You got to go make a
playlist. Yes, a lot.
Spotify. You got to go make a playlist on Titan. Then you got to go get all of the songs. You got to put them on the playlist. Then you got to arrange them in order. You get it?
And you got TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, yes. YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, all that. I'm talking about all that. And I'm managing over 150 portals myself.
Yeah. It's a lot.
People won't manage and do stuff the way you pay them. Soon as you pay them, they lollygag. With they lollygag on, I can do it in a few hours. You get it?
As soon as you pay them, they go on buying groceries. Yeah. They ain't doing the promo first. Yeah.
First thing they say, oh, your shit look good. Who you pay to do it? I'm laughing.
So are you producing all the music for all these artists that you're signing?
Well, the new artist is me and my musical team of Mellow Mac. From Pro Studios. Mellow Mac is pretty much the sound. He has his own direct sound. Then he has a sound he works with a guy he works with named Jacob G. They got a sound called County Line, to where they write and produce music together. And then me and Mellow got a sound that we create that's a mixture of R&B, hip hop, and political and, you know, inspiring music that me and him create. And that's the sound that I'm implementing with tabs of him and Jacob sound with the groups and the sound that I'm trying to create, like a Berry Gordy or Eazy-E. I want my own sound in the sense that it's moderate, it's part of the formula,
yeah,
but it has its own, you know,
identity. Its own identity.
Yeah, its own identity. And so, yeah, so Mello is the sound. You know, I work with the great Seagal who mixes it. You know, I go to the great studios like Paramount and Westlake Studios. I got a great bass player, Federico, and, you know, great guitars, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, the whole team is great. You know, the writing team, you know, Jacob and Mello, Keith Green, you know, Gray Lee writes amazing. So, yeah, man, it's Jamel writes. I got a great leadership with my company, with my sister running the company, Crystal Lester.
That's what's up.
You know, president, vice president. I got a great A&R, Jacob Garcia, who is a hustler. He's like the heart and soul of the street promotion. You know, we are now finna be out there hitting up all the venues this year. We got the tent, the backdrops now, pressing up the old school CDs again and vinyl, you know, you're getting the merchandising and pretty much getting out there, man. Got the QR code made now. You know, got the QR code poster, so when we set up, you know, so we can sell music on hands and then direct you to the modern music right there on the spot. So I'm pretty much got it all sold up. So I'm aligning everything, you know what I mean? And this is just a lot of work, a lot of money, a lot of dedication, commitment. You know, you watch people come and go, but you got to stay consistent in the trenches of your own work, your own self, hustle, and not be detoured by other people's lack of ability to want to work and want it handed to them, you know, want the spoon fed, and you know what I mean? And soon as, you know, you take the spoon out of their mouth and say, hey, let me see you feed yourself and help out a little bit, you know, they ain't got a clue.
We're about an hour in. I got one more question for you though.
Sure.
Being a gang, you know, coming from the gangster rap scene, what is your take on this cancel culture and censorship going on?
It's actually part of society growing as a whole, right? And trying to make retribution for a lot of wrongs and using people that might make a mistake, right? Immediately using old wrongs so that these new wrongs don't be left in vain and now coming to the forefront like slavery or like the Holocaust or like certain things that went on and were part of, you know what I mean? Things that were so devastating and part of history that it should have been, that should have been stopped back then.
I know,
but see, it's deeper what I'm saying, but I'm
yeah.
saying it helps apply where yeah. cancel culture is being built and formulated from. You got to
yeah.
get what cancel culture is. It's in their mind of judging, like they're the judge, the jury, and saying,
and the executioner,
and then spread it to the people as what you did is wrong. And then that, as the people gravitate to what you're saying is wrong, creates the cancel culture, brother.
Well, what about the censorship part? Like, as a gangster rapper, man, I mean, like,
right, but censorship may be censored in the media of a mainstream. But the underground ain't gonna never have a true censorship.
No, I get that, but I know for a fact that there's people that told me that their content would be censored if they didn't remove like Kanye West music and things of that nature on there, which is straight up censorship.
I get it. I understand that. You know, I'm on an interview. They set it on the table. All right. Cancel culture is huge now. You know what I mean? You look at Kanye, you know what I mean? And you look at how they tried to do Kyrie Irving, you know what I mean? So I'm just bringing up certain points, but really, you got to understand, everything has to come from somebody's feelings. It has to come from what somebody feel like is wrong in their mind. Council culture is about people gathering together to bond together to say what this person is doing is wrong. And so we're not going to support them in no type of way. So they're going to go after your money, your image, your everything that makes you successful. They're going to try to intimidate that to where you are hit. And so that's what cancel culture is. It's based on.
Okay. Last question then. Would you have made it in this cancel? Would y'all made it in this cancel culture era nowadays with some of the stuff y'all are saying?
I believe that we would have got away with it because of the ability that you can apply music as you apply a movie.
Yeah. That's how I look at it. That's how right. I look at it. Yeah. So people,
if a movie can go out and be Schwarzenegger, right? But what he's killing up is not reality.
Yeah.
What we're being Schwarzenegger and talking about ignorance. See, it's ignorance.
Isn't that a problem though? People take it too literal sometimes. They you know, yeah. No, I totally get it. It gets taken literal sometimes too much.
Right, but it's yeah. called right of opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody don't think the same. Everybody ain't gonna like the same. You might like Coke. I don't like Coke. I like Pepsi.
I like Coke. But I don't like Pepsi.
But does that make me and all my Pepsi fans right? We got no. Hey, let's cancel culture Coke. You know, Coke is bad. You know, all them Coke. Get it? You get what I'm saying?
Nah. Yeah, I get it.
So everybody has a choice whether you like their choice or not. And so when you bring social media into the realm of it,
yeah.
Social, look up the word social.
Yeah.
Media, look up the word media. So once you expose yourself to being social and everything you post is media,
yeah.
Right? Now you have the ability now for everybody to have an opinion about what you post and the media what you post as they respond to your post with a media response. And so that's how it distributes.
All right, before we go, you want to shout out?
Man, I just want to thank you for having me, brother. You're a great.
I appreciate
brother,
you coming on, man.
I thank you for the work you did with Tiffany, man. We got a lot more work coming up, man. You know, I'll be hitting you up on that. First and foremost, I just want to thank God, man, for having me here. My mom for bringing me here. All of Team Game Changer. Like, I have an amazing team, man. I can't give them enough love for what they do and what they have put up with and endured with this journey since I walked out of the jail. You know, in 2014, January 18th, you know what I mean? It's been a long journey for me, man. I have overcome and, you know, and I just want to thank God for that. And I just want to let everybody know, man, if y'all truly, man, supporting, you know, the West Coast, the movement, the sound, you know, having something that's polished and, you know, help building another legacy that represent not just myself and my label, but my people, the coast, you know, music as a whole. Man, support Project Game Changer, man. The CDs will be available in April. Go to all of the sites, man. I'm available on everything, man. Go add the music, man. Go watch a video, man, on my page, man. Show some love, man. You know, you saying you like my page, man, and not going to listen to a song is not no support. You going
exactly
to and not adding me to the playlist you play every day with Nicki Minaj and all them and won't add Cream to that, or not going to Spotify and not adding my musical stuff to your music that you play every day. So basically you're saying you like me from the outer, but you're not willing to go in the inner and contribute because you have some type of self-envy towards my greatness that you can't stop no way. You can't stop it no way. So why wait and be a bandwagoner, right, and wait till I go earn my weight and get it, and then you all alone faking like, oh, he sold this, he sold that, but you ain't did a fucking stream. So if you really got some love and support for what I'm doing, man, go on whatever you got, whatever you listen to, however way you do your thing, you know what I'm saying? Add some game changer music to it.
Yeah, and
that's all I ask, man. You know, support my, you know, my music, man. If it's whack, then you know, I don't expect you to play it, but I guarantee you, man, I got something you're gonna like.
And I'm going to add the links in the description of this video as well. And the audio version will be on Spotify, Apple, and all that as well, too.
Project so people Game be able to follow. 2023 is the playlist. So you can go on any site, right, and look for Project Game Changer 2023. And that playlist is going to have all my current new music.
That's what's up. Thank you for coming on, man.
Man, God bless, man. I appreciate it.
Havoc from the South Central Cartel. Appreciate
baby.
It. Peace.
Hey, I only got three words to what? Say.
What's
South
that?
South Central Madness.
Peace. Once again, I want to thank y'all for tuning in. Paul Pickett Podcast. That was Havoc from the South Central Cartel. A lot of hip-hop history going on in there. Check them out. And we'll definitely put the links of Game Changer in the description. Thank you for tuning in.